The reading of God's word comes from Genesis 39, verses 1 through 23. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelite who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him. And he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food that he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her or to be with her. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work and none of the men of the house were there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hands and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house." Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." As soon as his master heard the words that his wife had spoken to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were there in prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made succeed. Since the reading of God's word, you may be seated. Well, Joseph is one of those Bible characters, and this story is one of those stories in the scriptures that we are generally pretty familiar with if you've been in church for any amount of time or grew up going to Sunday school. And Joseph is one of those characters in the Bible where we kind of think of him as a second-tier character. Now, you have your first-tier characters in the Bible, right? Your Davids, your Pauls, your Marys, your Peters. These are the characters where if you've ever taken one of those online Bible quizzes where you fill out your personal information and tells you which Bible character you are, if you get Joseph, you're pretty excited. He's kind of like Barnabas, right? He's, you know, nothing really bad is written about Joseph so much. You feel pretty good about yourself. But then if your spouse or your roommate or your friend takes the same quiz and they get someone like Paul, you're a little jealous of them. You're like, "Paul, you're no Paul. Paul would do the dishes more often. Paul would change the diapers more often," right? And so Joseph is one of those characters, right? We kind of think of him in that way. And this story is a common story in which we hear about his resistance to temptation and we primarily take this text as an exhortation to flee sin. And while that is there, while we should flee sin, what we should see in this story, as with all stories of the Bible, all accounts in the scriptures, is they are not first and foremost about the morals that we should live by, though that is there, but they are first and foremost about the story of God's faithfulness to his people, the salvation that he brings. And the story of Joseph is no different. So what I would like us to see here, the main thing for us to see this morning, is that because God is with his people through the darkest of times, they can trust in his love and vindication through the darkest of times. And so in this account, we first see the rise of Joseph that happens, that occurs with him. The background information of Joseph, if you're not familiar, is that he is the 11th of the 12 sons that are born to Jacob. He is the first of the last two that are born to Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel. And if there's something that's more problematic than having multiple wives, and if there's something that's more problematic than playing favorites with your wives, it is also to play favorites with your children, right? And so Jacob does this. He makes it clear that Joseph is his favorite son. He gives him this coat of many colors because Joseph is the first wife to Jacob, or to Rachel, or the first son to Rachel, right? And Joseph also has a gift. Joseph sees dreams. He is a dreamer, but he's not a dreamer in the way that John Lennon is a dreamer. He is a dreamer in the sense that he has dreams that are actual revelation from God. And so he has these dreams, and in verse chapter 37, he tells how he will one day be ruler over his brothers. And as you can imagine, they don't really like these dreams too much. And so from that point on, they hate him. And he comes to a point in 37 where Joseph is going out into the fields to see how his brothers are doing, and they see him coming, and they plot to kill him. And they get to this point where Reuben, one of the brothers, says, because he's the only one who loved Joseph, he says, let's not kill him, let's throw him in a pit so that he can come back and rescue him later. And so they throw Joseph in the pit, and they see some Ishmaelite traders coming along, and they say, you know what? We don't want his blood on our hands, and you know what? We can make a quick profit here, so let's sell him to the Ishmaelite traders. And that's what they do, and the Ishmaelite traders come down to Egypt, they take Joseph, and they sell him to Potiphar, this high-ranking official under the Pharaoh. And that is the background, as well as the story of Judah and Tamar, Judah's daughter-in-law, who he also wrongs and ends up sleeping with, because he believes that she is a prostitute. So we see these complicated, these sinful relationships. All this stuff is the background to the story of Joseph. These things that the Bible is very honest about when it comes to the sinfulness of human beings and even God's own people, his beloved. And so we see this happening. And so the first thing that I want us to see here, this is the first point, is that the Lord was with Joseph. And I made a mistake when I picked the title. I said God was with Joseph. I should have said the Lord. And they are the same, don't get me wrong. But the Lord here, when it says the Lord, that is intentional on the part of the author, because the Lord is the covenant name of God's people. In Hebrew, this is Yahweh. This is the name that God didn't just have as a general name for all the nations of the earth, but this is the name that he gave Israel. And this is the name that he said, when you are in trouble, when your enemies are around you, this is the name that you will call upon for your deliverance. This is my covenant name. And that's important, and we'll see why later, because though God, the general term, is used more in Joseph's life, this name Yahweh is prominent in this text, though it is behind the scenes. And so, Joseph is in the house. He is in a privileged position. He's a slave in the house. And we see in 3 through 6 that the Lord blesses him so much so that all things are put under his feet and everything that he does succeeds. And so we get a glimpse, right, into Joseph's administrative ability. His ability to rule well is already present. And so Joseph is in charge of everything but the food that Potiphar ate. Now, this could be potentially a euphemism for Potiphar's wife, But more generally, it just means Potiphar's private affairs. So that is how much he is entrusted to Joseph. And so this is a pretty good gig, right? You see, it is at this point where the Lord being with Joseph makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, the text says that he is. But we often think, our natural way of thinking is that God is with us, and if I just act right, God will give me good outcomes, right? And so we have this kind of partnership with God. That's our natural, sinful way of relating to God. And so this all makes sense to us right here. And furthermore, it fits with Joseph's dreams, right? He's second in command. He has dreams of one day ruling. And so this is all making a lot of sense. But then we have the transition in 6b, right? Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Why is this here? Well, for one, it connects him back to his mother, Rachel, and to his great-grandmother, Sarah, who this is also said about them. But also as the calm for the storm, it sets up what happens next. And this is the second thing that I want us to see, the temptation and accusation of Joseph, or the temptation and accusation of the righteous, put another way. We see this attempted seduction occur in 7 through 9. When we read this, I'll just read it again as a refresher. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is no greater in the house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" We see here an attempted seduction, or even more bluntly, sexual harassment. You see, because the words that she uses here is not the wordage of wooing or coercing, but it's a very blunt imperative, right? Lie with me. And furthermore, it's not as if he has rights. You know, it's not as if he can just say, you know, well, no thanks. I mean, you're really nice, but I'd like to keep this relationship professional. This is a situation there is no escape out of. And furthermore, we see contrasted here the folly of Potiphar's wife with the wisdom of Joseph. Think of this incident in light of what Proverbs 5:20 through 23 says, saying this about adultery. "Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman, and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he's led astray." You see, Joseph knows that his ways are always before the eyes of the Lord. Therefore, how can he do this great wickedness and sin against God? So we see a man here who is not only shrewd in business dealings, but he is also displaying great character. And we see a form of sinfulness, of temptation, that occurs day after day. Day after day, this sinful temptation, this weight is bearing down on Joseph. There is nowhere for him to go to escape this temptation. The darkness closes in on him. Day after day, he has to go to this environment in which he faces constant temptation and harassment from both Potiphar's wife and the enemy. And so we have to think about this. What aspects of our lives mirror such attack? What ways are we also walking through the valley of the shadow of death, as the psalmist put it? We all have these ways in which we are constantly going through temptation. And so we see this temptation happening. We see this harassment happening. We see this darkness. But in verses 11 through 18, it is magnified even more when we have this accusation. "But one day when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by the garment, saying, 'Lie with me.' But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, 'See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. Then she laid up the garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house. And so we see the full weight of injustice occurring here. The victim of temptation and harassment is now accused of rape. He escapes one form of temptation and darkness only to be plunged deeper into it, only to be plunged deeper into injustice. And so this leads us to ask this question. This is the question we all need to ask. Does injustice thwart or stop the plans of God? You see, we have to ask ourselves, what hope do we have for the ways that we are sinned against? What hope do we have in the midst of injustice? And what hope can we offer those who have suffered sin, manipulation, and abuse? Do the scriptures really speak to such things? You see, the reality is that the historical accounts of God's people are filled with these type of stories. The Psalms are filled with the people of God crying out in the midst of injustice, crying out as they are being persecuted, looking for someone who will defend them in the midst of such suffering and injustice. And the Israelites would no doubt see in this story of Joseph and his slavery in Egypt a connection to their own slavery in Egypt, right? And so that is what's going on. And furthermore, these stories of injustice, these stories of false accusation, are prominent in our own history as a nation. This story is remarkably similar to the story of Emmett Till, who was a 14-year-old African-American boy, was kidnapped and then lynched because of an accusation that he whistled at a white shop owner. An accusation that white shop owner later said she made up. These are things in our own history. And just like this story, there's a racial element. You see in verses 14 and 17, Potiphar's wife points out that he is a Hebrew. And she does this in order to gain sympathy from the Egyptian slaves. So this is very much integrated here, right? These type of ways in which injustice and sin go back and forth in relationships also can have a racial element. There is no question about it. But for all of us, even if that's not our story, we no doubt have to ask, when we are on the receiving end of injustice, or when we see the people of God on the receiving end of injustice, or we see injustice in our broader world, we have to ask, does this stop the plans that God has, the plans that God has for salvation? So we keep that in mind. And then verse 19 and 20, we see the sentencing that happens. And as soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, this is the way your servant treated me, his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. It's interesting that Joseph is not put to death right on the spot. Again, remember, he doesn't have any rights. He doesn't have any right to a fair trial. He doesn't have any type of judicial protection. He is a Hebrew slave in a high-ranking official's household in Egypt. They could have easily done away with him, and that would have been that. But some commentators believe the reason he wasn't put to death is because Potiphar kind of, you know, knows the character of Joseph, for one, but he also has an idea of the character of his wife. And so as a way to kind of, you know, save face or make sure that Joseph is punished, and yet realizing this might not be the truth, he puts him into prison. And so Joseph is kept alive, but he is in deep darkness. And this leads to the second question that we should consider, is where is God and does he still love me in the midst of injustice? Is God still with me? Is God still with Joseph? You see, Joseph had the promise that he would eventually rule his brothers, that he would eventually be on a throne, and yet here he is at the bottom of a jail cell. Where is God? Ruling, what a joke. He goes from bad to worse. And so there are these moments where we know this type of darkness, where we feel the weight of our own sinfulness, where we feel the weight of sin that is all around us. And we, like Joseph, like the psalmist, can cry out, as the Psalm 88:13-18 says this, "But I cry to you for help, Lord. In the morning my prayer comes before you. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? From my youth I have suffered and been close to death. I have borne your terrors and am in despair. Your wrath swept over me. Your terror has destroyed me. All day long they surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. Darkness is my closest friend." Is that not the prayer of Joseph in this midst? Is that not often our prayer that we feel in the midst of our sinfulness, in the midst of injustice? Joseph is at rock bottom. And again, we have to ask these two questions. Does injustice thwart the plans of God? And is God still with us? Does he still love us in the midst of sin and injustice? You see, these are the questions, not only of victims, as we see in this text. These are the questions of victimizers. That is, those who not only receive the sin of others or experience the sin of others done to them, wrong done to them, but they are also the questions of those who do sin against others, because this is all of us, friends. We are all both in the category of victim and victimizer to some extent, right? Now, primarily, we are victimizers. We are sinners, right? And that is how we are held accountable before God. And yet we are held accountable for that because of what it does to other people, right? And secondarily, I would also like us to consider that the ways in which we are victims of sin is often connected to ways that we sin against others. Okay? So, if you were a kid, you might have been bullied in school. Or maybe you are a kid and you are bullied in school, right? And that is not unconnected to how you relate to others. You may be bullied in school, and because of that, you have a hard time having close relationships with others. You're distant, right? Or maybe you were abused, and because of that abuse, you are prone to lash out. Or maybe you had a parent when you were a kid who was an alcoholic. And maybe you swore you would never touch the stuff, but you're addicted to other things. You're addicted to food because you are looking for some kind of form of comfort, right? And so if we all kind of look down deep, if we all examine ourselves, we'll see that the ways that we sin against others are not unrelated to the ways that we have sinned against, as those sins connect onto our sinful nature. And so because of that, we need a positive answer to these two questions of where is God, does he love me, and does injustice thwart his plans? And so we see this in verses 21 through 23. When it says this, "In the midst of all this, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made succeed." You see again where it says that the Lord was with Joseph. This is the second part where you see this said, and you see all that has happened in between those two points where the Lord is with Joseph. A lot of sin, a lot of darkness has passed, and yet we are bookended by the promise that God is with Joseph, right? And so we have to ask, though, because all this darkness has passed, because of all this sin, because God seemed to be conveniently absent from the story, we have to ask ourselves, how does Joseph know the Lord is with him? And therefore, how do we know that the Lord is with us? Well, Joseph has the promises. You see, Joseph is the great-grandson of Abraham. And these promises that were originally made to Abraham, that I will bless you, that I will make you a great nation, these are passed down to Joseph. These are the Abrahamic promises that come down to him. And furthermore, he had these dreams that God promised to him that he would one day rule and reign. And so Joseph, in the midst of his darkness, in the midst of his darkest hour when there is no hope, all he has are the promises of God, to know that God is with him. And therefore, we need to know that God is with us. We need promises that we can hope for. And how do we have those promises? We see there are a number of parallels between Joseph and Jesus. Scholars have noted this. When you think about Joseph and wisdom and leadership, Jesus is called in Hebrews 3:3 the builder of the house of God. When you think about faithfulness and temptation, like Joseph was, in a way that we never could be if we're honest, Jesus withstood the devil in the wilderness in Matthew 4:1-11. And when you think about suffering for injustice, Jesus was delivered according to the definite plan of God and knowledge of God and crucified and killed by the hands of lawless men, Acts 2:23. You see, in this story, we find ourselves in a lot of places. Sometimes we're Jacob, where we have disordered loves. We do not love people as we should. We do not give them the love they are due. Sometimes we're Potiphar's wife, and we coerce other people through minor or maybe big ways to not obey the Lord's commandments, right? And sometimes we are the afflicted, like Joseph. And yet there's only one who we can say rightly took all this affliction the way Joseph did, and that is Christ. And therefore, because Jesus has suffered, he can empathize, he can support, he can be the rock for those who suffer injustice. And if you aren't sure that Jesus can be your rock for sin, if you're not sure that he is the one who delivers you, that he is the one who is with you in your darkest hour, in your darkest sin, in all of the misery that comes with it, just consider the words of Psalm 22. These words, which, by the way, he repeated at the cross. Now, he only repeated the first line, but as you may or may not know, when Jesus repeats the first line of this text, he implies or he means for all his hearers to hear the whole psalm. I'll only read a part, but listen to this. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I find no rest. Yet you are holy, enthroned on the praises of Israel, and you, our fathers, trusted. They trusted, and you delivered them. To you they cried and were rescued. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. But I am a worm, and not a man, scorned by mankind and despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They make mouths at me. They wag their heads. He trusted in the Lord. Let him deliver him. Let him rescue him, for he delights in him. You see, we need to know that Jesus is with us. And this psalm, this text, this story of Joseph is a foreshadowing of the way that Jesus is with us, even now. Even now, his presence is with us for our salvation. And secondly, we see in the story of Joseph that he is restored to some extent. We see that there is vindication for Joseph. And we see that Joseph's ultimate vindication is going to come later in the book, in chapter 50, verse 20. You see, Joseph is eventually restored fully. If you know the rest of the story, he is in the prison, and long story short, he interprets a couple dreams for the Pharaoh, and because of that, he rises to power, and he goes from the pit in one day on to second in command over all of Egypt, and God uses him in the midst of a famine. He uses his leadership ability, he uses these skills for administration to save all the people in the land and how he rules over the country. And so we see this path in which God brought him here. And after all this good has happened, after all these things have worked out for Joseph's ultimate vindication, his brothers confess their sin to him. And he says this in 50, verse 20. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. You see, there is an ultimate vindication for Joseph. And brothers and sisters, there will be an ultimate vindication for you. We are not promised in this life that all injustice will be done away with. We are not promised that we will be fully relieved of all the sin that we carry, though the Lord is present in all of it and giving us grace. But we are promised that one day Jesus will come again. And we confess that he will come again. And when he comes again, because your faith is in him, it will not be for your condemnation. It will be for your salvation. You will not be afraid on that day. You will be openly vindicated. You will be openly declared that you are righteous and that you have the kingdom just as it was your father's good pleasure to give to you. And in that day, all evil will be destroyed. All will be set right, and we will know perfectly that the Lord is with us, like he was with Joseph, and that his plans cannot be stopped. Let's pray.